Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
And Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Enjoyed the boat trip in this morning.
The boat trip, yes. Although where we're living, we're talking about getting a lot of rain. It's certainly not as bad as as the New Orleans area and wherever Tropical Storm Barry went. But we are getting a lot of rain and have been for the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 hours. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to increase for the next, 24 hours or something.
The worst thing when it comes to yard maintenance is when your yard is due to be mowed, and then here comes the week of rain.
Yes.
That's what I experienced. Yeah. Saturday night, I ran out of gas for my mower last week. Well, this week I needed to refill, so I drove to the gas station Saturday evening about 6 o'clock. I own 4 acres. Well, I mowed about an acre down in my pasture and got done with that, and it's getting dark. It's like 7:30, and I'm just ready to go inside and have dinner. So I don't mow the rest of my yard, and then Sunday morning comes the rain, and so it's going to be a week before I mow again.
Yeah, that's in the South, probably generally speaking, if you don't get your yard mowed when you've got a chance, you may not get a chance again until you have to call in someone to bush hog it.
Yes.
So anyway, so we ask our listeners to continue to pray for those who have been in the path of Tropical Storm Barry.
Yeah, the forecasters were right about Barry. They said it would become a hurricane for a brief period of time, and it did. But very quickly, it was dialed back to a tropical storm. It's now a tropical depression. They also said it wouldn't be a wind event. It would be a rain event. And boy, have they been right about that. We're talking about a foot of rain, a foot of water, folks, coming down in parts of Louisiana and also into Mississippi now. There are still, as of late last night, there were 60,000 customers in Louisiana without power, about 3,000, 4,000 people in Mississippi. So a lot of folks, particularly in the southern part of those two states, are really still feeling the impact of that. And the reason the forecasters said it would be a rain event has a lot to do with the speed as to which the system is moving. Very slow.
Right.
And so when you've got a system that has a lot of rain and it's moving very slowly, you're going to have flooding problems no matter where you are. So there have been flash flood warnings put up in both those states. It actually stretches into parts of Arkansas, eastern Texas, western Tennessee, and even southeastern Missouri. It's a huge system, but the kind of core of it is in central Mississippi, Louisiana, those areas. And the other problem, we were talking about this at the story meeting this morning, along the Alabama coastline, the Florida coastline. A colleague of ours was down on vacation there late last week, and riptide warnings.
Right.
And basically what that is, because of in the Gulf, the water's being churned up by Barry, it causes these riptides. So, you know, the waves come in big.
About these powerful undertows.
Undertows. Yeah. And there was an interesting story, and I'm not exactly sure where it was. I think it was Panama City, Florida, where there was what we saw in an image was a chain of 25 or 30 people, you know, the anchors being on shore, the others reaching out. They're holding each other's arms to rescue someone who was caught in these riptides. In other words, I'm not sure how old this individual was, but they're out there, and when the wave draws back, when those waves draw back, this person could not get back inshore.
Right.
They're stuck out there. Very dangerous situation. But these 25 or 30 people came to the rescue. They were smart enough to hold on to each other.
Right. Or you can get swept out too.
And they're able to rescue this individual. So this colleague of ours was on vacation. There were red flags up, literally.
Right.
Not figuratively speaking, but red flags all along that beach area. Not sure what it's like right now. And that's kind of on top of the algae problem.
Yes.
That they've been having down there.
The bacteria.
With bacteria that can be very dangerous to people.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a tough time for the coastlines
right
along the southeast there.
I read a story where a Tennessee man went to Destin, Florida.
Memphis guy, yeah.
And died from the bacteria because
yeah
he had a womb on his back, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah we're going, Destin is our family vacation spot,
mm-hmm,
and we're going there in the near future. And I'm probably not going to get in the water because there's the risk. And some would
right
say, well, it's only 1%, but I don't want to find out if I'm going to be the 1% or not.
Yeah.
So not that I actually get in the ocean that much. I have 3 kids now under 2 years old, so I'm going to be on the beach.
That's why there's swimming pools.
Exactly. Yes. And our resort will have a swimming pool and a lazy river, so maybe we'll just hang out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a lot of times people are talking about the riptides. People drown in them because your natural reaction is to swim towards shore.
Yeah.
And you tire yourself out swimming against that current. I remember growing up in New England, we called them riptides. I forget what they call them down here. Maybe they call them riptides down here in the South too, around the Gulf. But I remember being told you never swim against the current. If you're ever caught in one,
mm-hmm,
you swim parallel to shore till
yes
you get out of it.
Yeah.
But that's scary for people because
it
you're
is
going out, you know, you're going out into the ocean a little bit as you're being carried out and you're
yeah
swimming parallel. But they said never swim against the tide. But this was interesting. They had the human chain
yeah
there to bring somebody in.
Thank God.
Yeah.
There are enough people on the shore to form that chain.
Right.
Because that can be so dangerous.
All right. So can folks continue to pray for those who are affected by Tropical Storm Barry? Now, it never did it ever become a hurricane?
It did.
It did? Okay.
Very briefly, but as soon as it hit land, it died out. And as I say, the forecasters were 100% right.
Right.
This was not going to be a wind event. It was going to be a flooding event. I don't think the flooding in New Orleans was as bad as they thought it could be.
My understanding is the pumps worked pretty well
yeah
this time around.
There was
here
this concern because the Mississippi River is still very high
right
from flooding earlier
yes
up through the Midwest. And there was concern combined with this storm, there was going to be a real problem for the levees in New Orleans. But it wasn't as bad. I'm not saying it wasn't bad. It wasn't as bad as they thought.
I have a coworker here, Sherry Black, I think. She probably is, her voice is known to a lot of AFR listeners. But anyway, she said the Mississippi Delta, there's people there. It's still flooded. There's
yes
still people who haven't been able to get back into their homes. That hasn't gotten a lot of media attention because New Orleans is a big city and they,
mm-hmm,
you know, they usually get the, or Houston, those big places. But
yeah
Mississippi Delta, you're talking about some of the earlier flooding,
mm-hmm,
earlier flooding when we were still kind of in the winter
yeah
seasons, a lot of rain. So
yep.
All right. What
well
else we got?
What else? This may come as a shock to you guys, but do you know the president likes to tweet?
Hmm. Yes. Yes, he does.
And, you know, I'm assuming he sleeps with it by the bedside. You
yeah
know, he's got that Twitter account going. Well, he decided over the weekend that he was a bit frustrated with the, what do they call them, the Group of Four?
Yeah, well, we gave them the nickname, the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse.
I think you did it.
Oh, I did. Oh, well, I knew it was one of us. Somebody did.
That must have been when I wasn't here.
You were.
I would have remembered that.
You would have remembered giving him that,
yeah
that name. I said, I meant no disrespect, of course, but I said they bring death and destruction throughout the Democratic Party, wherever they go. So,
and the four we are talking about is AOC. I guess we can just refer to her as that AOC.
You think there's anybody who doesn't know who that is? It's just it's so burdensome to say Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez every time.
But that's who AOC
yeah
is.
I'll tell you what, from now on, we'll mention her full name once during the show and then go
right
with AOC.
AOC. Then we have Congresswoman Tlaib from Michigan and Congresswoman Omar from Minnesota, and Congresswoman Presley from Massachusetts.
Right.
So those four, I think most of our listeners, they've kind of ganged up. They have become the faces of the radical left. And you'll remember last week, I mean, they've been sparring with their leader, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Yes.
Openly. And last week, because Nancy Pelosi had said something about them,
right,
that they're only four and four votes.
That's all they got.
And then AOC came back and said, well, and I'm paraphrasing here, Pelosi has something with...
against brown people.
Brown people. All right. Which was accusing Nancy Pelosi of being racist.
Right.
Anyway, they have been very critical of, they've made claims about the way people are being kept at the border in these detention centers. Other names have been used for that. Anyway, the president over the weekend decided to say that, and I'm paraphrasing to a certain extent here, if these people think things are really bad here, they ought to go back to where they came from, look at the problems there, fix them, and then come back here to the United States and tell us how they did. Now, there is a problem, a factual problem, with what the president had to say. Congresswoman Omar is the only one of those four who has immigrated from another country to come here, and she became a citizen.
From Somalia. Right?
From Somalia. The other three are born and raised here in the United States.
Tlaib is born in Michigan.
In Michigan.
Where she is a congresswoman.
That's right. AOC in New York and Presley from Massachusetts. So anyway, so he's, you know, some are claiming that was a racist comment. I think his point was, if you think things are really bad here, you ought to go to other places, and certainly in the case of Omar, to Somalia. When you've got the problems fixed there, you come back and tell us how to do things. But until that time, have a look at what reality is here. And let's face it, AOC in particular, I think, has made outlandish comments. She went down to the border. She comes away talking to reporters saying, you know, remember the comment, I think it was last week, that some of the people there are drinking water out of toilets.
Right.
It was a bold-faced lie. And so I think Trump is now, if you think he's going to back down, he is Donald Trump. He doesn't back down. This morning, he was back at it again. And he said, when will the radical left congresswomen apologize to our country, the people of Israel, and even to the office of the president for the foul language they have used and the terrible things they have said? So many people are angry with them, at them, and their horrible and disgusting actions. And his reference to Israel there has its reference to some of the things that both Omar and Tlaib, they're both Muslim congresswomen, they have said about Israel and some references to the Holocaust.
Yeah. I understood what the president was saying, the factual mistakes that he had made by, I don't know whether he actually believed that all four of them were from other countries or not. I don't know. And people who think they know are just not necessarily wrong, but they have no insight. It did have, in my opinion, it did have racial overtones when you assume that because they are not white, that they must not be from around here.
Right.
Okay. But I don't think the president was being racist. I think he was talking about, and this is where the factual stuff gets mixed up sometimes with the president, because tweeting, which is why I don't tweet, okay, tweeting lends itself to off-the-cuff commentary. And you don't think about it like you do if you have to write an email. You have to sit down. You can just, you know, spit it out and send it. But you generally have to compose something that looks like a letter. But tweeting doesn't allow this. So he was probably just thinking, well, we've got a couple of Muslims. They're not from around here. You know, we have, Ilhan Omar, definitely not. So that's why I don't like sometimes these tweets. But I do think the point is legitimate. You're going to criticize America. Find some place that's better. Okay. Well, we do have our problems, but it's pretty good here. And at least for Omar, you know, the place that you came from, which is, I guess, what he had in mind with all four, is a wreck. Somalia is a wreck.
So. Needless to say, a lot of people responding to it. Mark Short is with Vice President Pence. He's in his office. But he was asked about the comments on the weekend. Cut number five. This is what he has to say.
When people write that the president has racist motives here, it's just look at the reality of who's actually serving in Donald Trump's cabinet. He's making a point about a great frustration a lot of people feel that I think it's hard to find anything Ilhan Omar has actually said since elected to Congress that's been positive about the United States of America.
And that's the sentiment of a lot of people. They are frustrated, and we'll have the larger discussion, but they are a problem for the Democratic Party as well. As I said, last week they were taking verbal knocks at Nancy Pelosi, and a lot of people say the best thing for the Republicans going into the election next year is let these four and some of the other Democratic presidential candidates keep talking.
Well, you know, Walker, the fact of the matter is, at least in the case of AOC, she's got a lot of name recognition right now. I'm sure a lot of people don't know who Ilhan Omar is, probably fewer Tlaib, and even fewer still Presley, except in their respective states. But AOC is becoming the face, at least she is, she's becoming the face of the radical left within the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And to Fred's point, her attack against, political attack against Nancy Pelosi indicates they're not going to play nice with the Democratic Party establishment.
Yeah, and to President Trump's, you know, his tweets, I don't know where Ocasio-Cortez parents were from. They might have been both born in America. My instinct, and I don't know this, is that Tlaib's family probably immigrated. While she might be born in America, her family could have immigrated.
She's of Lebanese descent.
Okay, so her family could have came from as immigrants from Lebanon. But the point, the sentiment that President Trump is displaying is what many of us think, and not just about people with different last names than ours. I think this about people in Hollywood who they were born in America, their parents were born in America, their great-grandparents. It doesn't matter where you're from. It's this whole idea that you hate America. And whether your family are immigrants or not, you hate America, so why be here? And that's what we said about the Hollywood elites back in the 2016 election. They kept saying, if Donald Trump wins, I'm moving to Canada. If Donald Trump wins, I'm moving to Europe. Well, what happened? They didn't. But they still bash our country. And so the sentiment that President Trump is sharing is what many of us have said all along, and that is if you hate America so much, then go somewhere else. Go to go to Europe and join, or go to China, join their communist regime, and see how much better you do there. And Ocasio-Cortez and some of these other Democrats that have really risen in the ranks over the course of the past year or two, they're really running the party. And some would say, well, no, Nancy Pelosi's running the party. And from a numbers standpoint, she might be. Pelosi, I think, does have the majority of support amongst her caucus. Hence the, you know, you saw last week that some of the Democrats were rebuking Cortez, basically standing up for Pelosi. But when it comes to the media perspective, AOC gets most of the attention, and she runs the show when it comes to the media.
Well, and the positions of the far left are what the presidential candidates for the Democratic nomination seem to be holding to.
Yeah.
We're talking about far left policies. So you say, well, okay, Nancy Pelosi runs the House of Representatives. Is she going to run the fields? Is she going to determine what the Democratic field is going to hold to in terms of policy issues? It doesn't look that way.
It's very interesting, Ed. You drew our attention this morning to an Axios poll.
Yes.
This is fascinating, folks. And this is dealing with people who support it. They are described by the poll as white non-college voters. These are people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016, but are needed by the Democrats in swing House districts. So a lot of these folks, they voted for Trump 2016, but in the election last year, they switched over and helped the Democrats gain control of the House. So Axios goes out and they talks to these people who I self-identify as these folks.
Right.
And here's what's really interesting. On Ocasio-Cortez, She was recognized by 74% of those voters in the poll. Only 22% had a favorable view.
Yeah, that's a disaster for the Democratic Party.
They know who she is. They're listening to what she says. But by golly gee, we sure don't like what she's saying.
Right.
And we think she's a dangerous woman. Likewise, with Congresswoman Omar of Minnesota, another member, the squad is another phrase that's being used to describe these four. She was recognized by 53% of the voters, 9%, the story here says, not a typo, 9% had a favorable view. All right, so this is what we're talking about. We're talking about these people, Walker, you were saying, AOC in particular, becoming the face of the Democratic Party. There's almost not a day goes by when she's not being quoted somewhere, and she knows this.
Right.
I mean, whether she's sitting on a House committee or she goes down to the border, she knows she's going to get a pile of attention because if she speaks anything and almost everything that comes out of her mouth is anti-Trump, the mainstream media, who is also anti-Trump, is going to put her on the nightly news.
Well, this is why these kinds of numbers are why this is a disaster for the Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah.
Because those candidates on the stage during that debate, I'm talking about the Democratic Party candidates for the nomination, 24 of them. I think Swalwell dropped out and then someone else jumped in. So still 24.
Yep.
So they're all raising their hands for radical left policies because they believe, this is the perception, perception is reality kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
They believe AOC or the squad or whatever we want to call them, they believe that younger, the more energetic part of the Democratic Party base supports these far left policies. They support AOC. They support Tlaib and Omar Presley. So that's their perception. So they're raising their hand on the stage for these far left policies, but these numbers from this Axios poll indicate that the vast majority of the Democratic Party base do not hold to these kinds of policies.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about who gets the nomination, I think that's why Joe Biden is still far ahead in terms of polling of Democratic voters. But for the Trump reelection campaign, you're going to have all these far lefties raising their hand and spouting some of these ridiculously leftist policies, and that's going to stick on whoever the Democrats pick.
Yeah.
That's why this is a disaster for the Democratic Party.
And this is the kind of thing that you can bet that the Republicans are going to use in campaign ads. You're going to see the face in Republican ads of AOC. And you're going to see the face of Omar in some of these ads because they read these polls too. The other thing that this poll showed was socialism is toxic to these voters. And that is why you're going to see part of the strategy of the Republican Party is to paint the far left. This is what the Democrats want to turn America into.
Here's where the Democrats took the wrong turn. I'm not talking morally here. I'm just talking politics-wise. When the Democrats shifted from a cultural liberal approach to everything, homosexual marriage, on and on and on, when they shifted from that to socialism, they made a wrong turn. Why? Because CEOs and companies might lean liberal on cultural issues, which they do, vast majority of them, but when it comes to capitalism, they love it. Why? Because they've gotten rich off of it.
That's right.
So a CEO might be for same-sex marriage, but he's not for socialism. Why? Because socialism is going to cut into his paycheck.
That's why the founder of the Black Entertainment Television Network, Richard Johnson, that's why he said they'd gone too far left.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we will come back with more of today's issue.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Frank Turek of Cross Examine.
He and I did many seminars together over the years. In fact, we were doing a seminar called 12 Points That Show Christianity Is True, and that turned out to be the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Now, how did we come up with that title? Well, I didn't come up with it. Dr. Geisler did.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
You know, the Bible talks about a place where the angels, or the heavenly hosts, appear to the shepherds in the fields announcing the birth of the Savior, Jesus Christ, in Bethlehem. Well, we go there during our tour of Israel. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Now, we can't be certain we're at the exact spot when we visit the shepherds' fields, but we do know it was either there, what we're looking at, or somewhere near there, where the shepherds received the news of the glory of our Savior being born in Bethlehem. If you want to go with us in March to Israel, please find out more information at the website twholyland.com, twholyland.com, or call 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, for a free brochure, and we hope to see you on our tour of the Holy Land.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A graphic design flaw in Texas. More next. Todd Starnes here, and America is facing a great danger as socialism and secularism continue to grip our nation. The left is not holding back in this culture war, and neither can we. That's why Liberty University's mission of training the next generation of faith-based conservative leaders is so vital. Their students know the value of free enterprise and individual freedom, and they will fight for it. So join me in supporting the next generation of conservative leaders. Visit liberty.edu/Starnes today.
A high-profile graphic design conference disinvited one of their keynote speakers because he's a Christian. David Rourke is the communications director at the Village Church, a Southern Baptist congregation in Texas. Mr. Rourke had been invited to speak at the Circles Conference, but the Dallas chapter of the American Institute of Graphic Arts complained. They accused the Village Church of discriminating against gay people, opposing same-sex marriage. The organizers of Circles Conference said they had to remove Mr. Rourke so they could create a safe space for other designers. Let's be clear. David Rourke is a fine communications director, and the only reason he was cast out was because of his mainstream Christian views on sexuality. Bakers, florists, wedding planners, now graphic designers, don't be surprised if one day you have to pledge allegiance to the rainbow flag to do business in America. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations, and Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. We're going to have a guest here in just a moment, but I do want to let you listeners know right after that, we're going to talk about a story. You're going to want to hear this, folks, about what protesters did to the American flag in Aurora, Colorado. It is a suburb of Denver, Colorado. Wait till you hear this. Wait till you hear what officials did in Aurora. Lots of this kind of thing happening around the country, so stay tuned for that. Also, I want to let you know that if you would like to watch the program online, you can go to today's, you can go to either Facebook or YouTube and type in Today's Issues and watch us online, or you can go to afr.net. We are live streaming the program there, and you can watch online at any of those locations. All right, well, we were talking in the last segment about Tropical Storm Barry and the damage that it did, and so we want to welcome back Steve Tiber, who's executive director and co-founder of 8 Days of Hope, no stranger to our AFR listening audience. And speaking of someone who has been around to a lot of the disasters in our nation, Steve, welcome to Today's Issues.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great. Some of our People, some of the people in the U.S. are not doing great after Tropical Storm Barry and some of the other natural disasters we've had. For those who might be new to American Family Radio and have not been made aware of the work of 8 Days of Hope, why don't you let them know what you guys do and where they can find out more information?
Yeah, 8 Days of Hope started very innocently. My dad and I thought it'd be cool to help somebody, one family, after Hurricane Katrina. I was living in Tupelo, Mississippi at the time. He was in New York. And the goal was to take 6 people. And it was a simple goal, and help a widow, maybe an elderly couple. Well, as so many times I've seen over the last 14 years, I think I've developed a plan, or I have a plan laid out. And God continues to remind me and the other leaders of 8 Days of who's in control, not us, he is. And that trip, it was meant to be six, took 684 people to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi. And during an 8-day period, helped 84 families rebuild their homes for free, sharing Jesus not only with words, but probably more importantly with action. We just were loving and serving people in need. Since then, we've traveled around the country, Hurricane Irene, Isaac, Rita, Katrina, Harvey, Michael, Florence, flooding, snowstorms, tornadoes, volcano eruptions. We have gone pretty much from coast to coast. We've helped out about 5,400 families now, sharing Jesus. Our testimony when a homeowner or family member we're serving says, you know, why'd you come from Oregon or Mississippi or Texas to come serve me? And you get a chance to share how you know the Lord and love the Lord. And it's been about $50 million of work, and here we are now. It seems like we don't get a week to breathe. This year we've already been to Alabama, tornadoes, Nebraska with flooding, Oklahoma flooding, Fort Smith, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Arkansas for flooding, and now today equipment and people headed to Louisiana to serve. So it's been a whirlwind, but that's the long story. I don't know if it was short, but that's the long story short.
Well, you know, Steve, one of the guys who works with 8 Days of Hope is in my Sunday school class at church, Chris Childs. And every once in a while, we ask Chris, or the Sunday school teacher asks Chris to share what God is doing through 8 Days of Hope. And I just got to tell you, I am always, and folks who are listening, I am telling the absolute truth. I am blown away by how God reaches people through these actions. And Steve, I'm going to ask you in a second to give us an example of how people are touched by the Christians who go to these places and you know, who share Jesus. That's one of the things that I love the most about 8 Days of Hope. They not only go and do the physical things, but they also share Jesus. They are not ashamed of the gospel. Steve, I know I'm just putting you on the spot here. Can you think of an example of how God just used one of these things to touch somebody?
God has blessed us with 152 volunteer leaders, 31 states, 10 different denominations. But the one common denominator is that we all acknowledge that without Jesus, we're nothing. We're believers. We're followers of Christ, and we want to share that same love and that same hope that we know in him. I'll go right back to the first trip, Miss Anna Mae. Miss Anna Mae was 84. She was living on a street in Waveland, Mississippi. And we had some college students from Michigan that had come down, and they were serving with us. And I remember on day number two, one of the college students said, you know, we're not very handy. We kind of feel a little bit lost, but I know God wants us here for a reason. You know, thank you so much for allowing us to be here. Well, on day six, these girls, I mean, this lady's house was 3 blocks from our headquarters. And I happened to be walking down the street, and they were screaming, Mr. Steve, Mr. Steve. Well, these college students who didn't really have a lot of skill set in their mind, Miss Anna Mae asked them, you know, why didn't you guys go to, you know, Padre Island or the beach? I mean, why'd you come and serve me? And they shared their testimony. And Miss Anna Mae, 84 years young, who just two months earlier, had seen her sister die in the home that was being rebuilt, she fell on her knees on a concrete driveway. And she said yes to Jesus. And she met Jesus for the first time, because these college girls didn't do the spring break or Christmas ski trip, but they came to be the hands and feet. And we've seen that hundreds of times. Guys, I'm not exaggerating. We have volunteers who come on a mission trip thinking they know the Lord, and then they hear biblical truth while they're serving on a mission trip to realize that they themselves don't know who he is. And so, you know, these leaders, they could be making a lot of money doing what we do in the business world, but they are so convicted in sharing that hope and love and we know in Jesus. And again, dozens and dozens and dozens of those same stories. Miss Anna May is in heaven now. She knows, you know, she completed her journey about 5 years ago, but these college students impacted eternity with them giving back.
Steve, I want you to let our listeners know about your website, what kind of information they can find there, because that's where they can go to find out where the opportunities to serve are, or sure. If they want to give to 8 Days of Hope. How do they do that? Where's the website?
Yeah, I mean, right now we have equipment in Louisiana. We haven't deployed to an actual city. We're in multiple places with some of our partners, Our Savior's Church and some others. They can go to our website. You can donate right there on the website. Here's what's unique about 8 Days of Hope. Every penny, I mean every penny, that is donated right now, either on our website, I'll give a mailing address in a minute, every penny will be spent in Louisiana helping with the outreach. We have some fixed costs that are covered by our partners, and so we're a very unique organization. It's just a different model than most. But you can donate online at 8daysofhope.com, 8daysofhope.com. Right now, we have a match. We have a generous donor who said, hey, you guys can raise $50,000. We'll match it penny for penny. And we're going to be buying some feeding equipment, some more equipment to do some tree work that's been caused by the winds down there. But every dollar will be matched for the next 2 weeks. Also, they can mail a check to our post office box. It's 3208-3208, Tupelo, Mississippi, 38803. But more importantly than all that, pray. You know, right now, people are feeling desperate. They don't know where to turn. And then a stranger shows up. And just pray that God opens the door, kind of like he opened up with Miss Anna May and those college students from Michigan, that our volunteers that are down there, leaders or people that are utilizing the equipment that God's blessed 8 Days of Hope with, that when that door opens, they share truth and those families respond. Continue to pray for safety as well. But again, 8daysofhope.com.
Hey, Steve, before I let you go, there may be people who are listening and they're thinking, listen, I'm not a plumber, I'm not an electrician, I'm not a carpenter, so you can't use me. But that's not true. You'll use anybody, won't
you? Yeah. You know, we just left Arkansas. We were there for 5 weeks, Pine Bluff and Fort Smith. The week before that, we were in Nebraska. The week before that, we were in Alabama. And all those trips are rapid response trips. And you need literally no skill set. We have single moms, grandparents. We have college-age students. If you can carry debris outside a house, if you could handle a wheelbarrow, if you can pull tree limbs that are cut by a guy that knows how to operate a chainsaw or a lady, we need you. To get our email alerts, go to our website and click Get Involved. Submit your email address. Maybe you can't help right now, but we'll send you an email anytime God opens up a door for us to love and serve somebody in need. Again, 8daysofhope.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Excited to see what God does here over the next couple weeks.
All right, Steve, thank you so much. God bless 8 Days of Hope. Thank you for what you personally do, and keep up the great work for the kingdom.
Thank you, guys. God bless you. Appreciate
you. That's Steve Tiber, Executive Director and co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. That is a superb ministry, and that is God-breathed. Mm-hmm. I mean, God did that. Walker, your grandfather, mm-hmm. Brother Don Wildman, who started AFA and AFR, he had a really big hand in starting Yeah. 8 Days of Hope. So the reason I mention that is a lot of times people will say, AFA, all you care about is politics. Mm. Well, no, this ministry has been involved in so much that impacts the kingdom and brings forth the Yeah. glory to God. And I'm not tooting the horn of the ministry I work for. I just, in essence, just work here. It's others like your dad and your grandfather mm-hmm. who've had the vision to say, no, we're going to help this guy. We're going to help Steve Tiber. We're going to be having in August Truth for Youth Bible campaign. You know, so AFA does a lot of things that a lot of people don't know about. Obviously, we're involved in politics and culture.
Sure.
Because we think those things are really important, too.
So. Yeah, it's neat to see what Steve Tiber and his entire team at 8 Days of Hope have done. And and the lives that have been changed that some of us might never know about.
Right.
You know, and so it's encouraging to see.
All right, Fred, let's talk about what happened in Colorado, because our listeners aren't going to believe what happened.
Here's the thing. What happened in Colorado on the weekend is a part of a much larger story that has been totally distorted by the mainstream media. We have tens of thousands of people trying to get into this country illegally, or they're showing up and they're told to read a few words by ACLU lawyers to claim asylum,
right.
And our border people have no... So we're talking tens of thousands of people who are coming into this country either illegally, just crossing a hole in the fence or whatever the case may be. So we have detention centers that have had to be set up around the country to hold these people until they get a court date.
Right.
And so one of these detention centers is in the Denver, Colorado area, a suburb of Aurora. And over the weekend, there were protesters, almost 2,000 of them showed up at this detention center there in Aurora. And some of them broke through a barrier, trespassed, pulled down the American flag in front of this detention center, tried to burn it, and then replaced it with a Mexican flag. Now, this is the kind of thing that's going on. And the police, this Associated Press story quotes Aurora Police Chief Nick Mintz, who said police decided not to intervene when the flags were being removed to protect the safety of the majority of the protesters who were acting peacefully. So they just stood back and watched all of this happen. I mean, and this is just the latest example of folks of what's going on in this country. There happened to be a Republican congressman in Colorado this weekend at a meeting there. He's Congressman Chip Roy of Texas. He was on Fox and Friends this morning describing what happened at the facility during the weekend. Cut number one.
To have a bunch of people go in and attack this facility and rush the facility and pull down the flags, turn the American flag upside down, rise up the Mexican flag, that is offensive. And I was proud to see Americans who went by all day and dropped off American flags. I was proud to see the American flag flying. And I wanted to go by and show support and see what was actually happening. Because here's the thing. It is the lack of funding for ICE that the leftist radicals in Congress, the Democrats, that refuse to give the funding to ICE are causing the very problem they decry at the border. And it's offensive for them to support the kind of people that would do this to our law enforcement community.
Yeah, so there you have it. It's exactly. I like taking people back. Remember, President Trump said, I need money to secure our border.
Right.
How did the Democrats respond to that? They claimed it was a manufactured crisis.
Nancy Pelosi said, we're not giving him a dollar.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Yeah, we don't. It's a manufactured crisis. Now, all of a sudden, they can't hide it anymore, that we do have a crisis on the border. Now they're attacking President Trump and the Republicans for trying to deal with this.
Right.
And I mean, you literally, as I say, have tens of thousands of people showing up at the border, either crossing the border illegally or claiming asylum, and they're being held. And I mean, this past weekend, ICE began raids, and we have to clarify this for people. What ICE started to do this weekend, by the way, and Nancy Pelosi was coaching these people who are in the country illegally, these raids are aimed at people who have already appeared before a judge.
Right.
And they have been ordered deported. They're not just going around the country, ICE agents, picking people up.
Right.
These are people who have been ordered deported by a judge. Nancy Pelosi was coaching these people on the weekend how to avoid this, keep this from happening. This is where we are, folks.
Yeah.
We got Democrats. We've got a House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, working against people who are trying to
working
secure
for criminals.
Working for criminals.
Yeah, she's coaching criminals on how to remain criminals.
Yeah. This is how bad it's
you
become.
You cannot allow protesters or mobs. This moved from protesters to mobs when they started messing with the flag. You can't allow a mob to remove an American flag, deface it, which is what they did. They removed the American flag, raised the Mexican flag, and on a separate flagpole, they turned the American flag upside down, spray painted it, and rose it back to the top.
Yeah.
That cannot be allowed. And that this is the problem in our country that these local municipalities are dealing with, and this is federal property, which they should all be charged with trespassing. If you're on the federal property without permission, this is not a national park. So it's not like everybody has a right to go there. You don't have a right to go to the detention facility property. And if you're given a warning to leave the property and you don't, everybody gets charged with trespassing, peaceful or not peaceful. Everybody across the board gets charged, gets handcuffed, processed, charged with trespassing. But for whatever reason, not only here, but in Oregon or wherever we've been seeing these Antifa protests, the law enforcement, for whatever reason, they're saying stand down, telling officers to stand down. And what's happening, there's vandalism going on. There's people getting beat up, getting glass bottles thrown in their face, getting quickcrete concrete thrown on people. This is anarchy. And I don't care whether it's so-called the people on the right doing the mobbing mobster stuff or the people on the left. They both, you have to clamp down on everyone who breaks the law in the name of protest.
Well, and to your point, Walker, this is anarchy. And my own personal opinion is that you have law enforcement officials and sometimes mayors, like in Seattle and other places, who tell the police to stand down. They do this because they support the protests.
Yes.
They support the protesters. Mm-hmm. And what they should be doing, as Walker was saying, is their job. And their job is now. The fact that this was federal property, including the flag. Now, if you show up at a place and are in a public space, like on a sidewalk or at a, you know, a state park or at a city park, and you bring your own American flag, the Supreme Court has said you are allowed to burn it in protest. All right, nobody likes it. Most people who love this country don't like it. But if you want to bring your own flag, that's fine. But when you go onto federal property, take the federal property down, the federal flag, that is theft. That is trespassing. Mm-hmm. And the police should do their jobs. And the state and the police chief, that's a bunch of bunk. I don't believe it. He's saying they wanted to protect the peaceful. If they're peaceful protesters, when the police come in to get the ones who are trespassing and stealing public property, if they're peaceful protesters, then you'll say, please move out of the way. We're going to arrest these people. If they're really peaceful protesters, guess what they'll do?
Yeah.
They'll step aside. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then they're not peaceful and they should be dealt with appropriately. Mm-hmm. And you want to, you know, you want to hassle with and try to obstruct the police from doing their job. You want to lay your hands on the police. Well, then you should be responded to. So this was an outrage, and I was glad to hear this congressman. What was his name? Chip Roy. Mm-hmm. I'm proud to hear a member of Congress standing up against public servants who obviously are not serving the public. They are in cahoots, as far as I'm concerned, with protesters.
You know, this was just the latest manifestation of where we are in the country right now. It's a political divide. It's an ideological divide. It's a spiritual divide. And there are examples. It's going to come to a head. And I'm not sure we're going to like what we see in this country. But last week, there was, and it kind of got lost in some other news, the former acting ICE director, Thomas Homan. If you watch Fox at all, you often see him.
Right.
He appeared before a congressional hearing, and he was challenged by a Democrat congressman, Jesus Garcia of Illinois. Now, I want this is going to take about a minute and 40 seconds, but I think it's a manifestation of exactly where we are in this country, and the American people are going to have to decide who's right and who's wrong in all of this. It's cut number 6.
Mr. Homan, I'm a father. Do you have children? How can you possibly allow this to happen under your watch? Do you not care? Is it because these children don't look like children that are around you? I don't get it. Have you ever held a deceased child in your arms?
First of all, your comments are disgusting. I've served my country.
I find your
I've served my country. I've served
well,
my country
sir.
For 34 years.
I find your
this
comments
is, this
disgusting
is out of control.
As well.
I've served my country for 34 years. And yes, I held a 5-year-old boy in my arms that, in back of that tractor trailer. I knelt down beside him and said a prayer for him because I knew what his last 30 minutes of his life were like. And I had a 5-year-old son at the time. What I've been trying to do my 34 years serving my nation is to save lives. So for you to sit there and insult my integrity and my love for my country and for the and for children, that's why this whole thing needs to be fixed. And you're the member
we
of Congress.
We agree on that.
Fix it.
No. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Holman should be given a chance to respond.
No one in this room has seen what I've seen in my 34-year career. No one has experienced what I've experienced. I've saw many dead bodies coming across this border. And you want to talk about the memo? This memo is one option to stop death. Not just about enforcing the law, stop death. If you want to legalize illegal immigration, good luck with that, because it's going to get worse on that border. If you say, well, okay, from now on, there will be no consequence, no deterrence. It's not illegal to come to this country illegally. More families will come. 31% women will be raped. More children would die. If you don't like it.
So there you have it. That's wow. That's Tom Holman. Former.
Well, he's just, Walker, he's just fed up with having their character. And I don't know what it must be like for these ICE agents. Maybe we can get to before the time's up, or maybe Steve Jordahl, I think, is going to have some of this information during the next segment. But you have these members of the federal government trying to do their job, trying to uphold the law, trying to protect the border of this country, trying to, in a real way, protect the lives of the people who are coming across illegally, and they're being called names, and their integrity is being impugned by these members of Congress who, for purely political reasons, are twisting the truth.
Yeah.
No wonder Holman was so angry.
Yeah, I would have been. Yeah, I completely 100% understand his frustration, and it's justified. And the most disgusting thing of it all is that everyone knows there's a problem. Even Democrats are now calling it a crisis. Why are they doing that? So they can blame President Trump.
Right.
But remember, 2 months ago, they were saying, this is not a crisis, nothing to see here, no big deal. Now they're saying it is because they want to leverage that to blame President Trump. But both Republicans and Democrats for 40 years have done nothing to fix the problem, and that in of itself is shameful. And you really, as a member of Congress, especially Democrats who don't even want to vote on solutions, you have no standing, no legitimate argument to criticize anyone down there who is at least trying to fix a problem such as ICE and Customs. You cannot accuse them of anything. You cannot criticize them for anything when you yourself are doing nothing to fix it.
I think this is a crisis that has been created by the Democratic Party. And your dad has often said this quite deliberately.
Yes.
Because they want, the Democrats want more and more millions of people in this country, living in this country illegally. They want them because they believe they will vote Democrat. And the last few elections have been very close, folks.
Yeah.
A couple of million votes. And the Democrats, this is why the Democrats are fighting voter ID laws.
I will say this. Traditionally, this was not fixed by both parties.
Yes,
why? Because
the
Republican political class, they're tied to Wall Street and big business, mm-hmm. and they use cheap labor,
yes,
millions of cheap labor, so that the CEOs and the boards can get another buck.
Yep.
That's one aspect. So at some point along the way, the Democrats realized that we can leverage this. Republicans leverage it for more money, I'm saying in general, the elites. Democrats at some point said, if Republicans aren't going to fix it, then neither are we, and we're going to use them for votes in the near future.
Yeah.
And so now both parties are using it.
I see nothing wrong with the explanation you just gave. I think that is absolutely what's happened in this country. You can prove it because Chuck Schumer is on record under the Obama administration calling for an end to illegal immigration.
Yeah. Yes.
So how did he suddenly change his mind with the new playbook where they can try to turn states like Texas blue with people coming over here from other countries in Central and South America. Okay, Fred, thanks for being with us.
You are welcome.
Folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. Steve Jordahl will be back with more here on Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.